It's on Showtime forever. Then it was on Netflix. I don't think it's on Amazon now. I don't know. I'll have to check.
I was an extra in a Lifetime movie. That's about my in person.
Yeah.
But perfect. Well, welcome everybody. We are on episode 3 of the Forecast. Of course, you've got myself, the Nate Keeper, Nate Elks, representing Foreteller from the community management side and from the podcast side. Right here above me to the right, I've got our wonderful Sad Skull executive producer and all around amazing human, Adam Leyenbauer. Hello, Adam. How's it going?
Wonderful to be back here with you again, Nate. And I'm looking forward to talking some shop with my man, Travis Oates.
Right above me to my left, we've got Travis Oates over here, voice actor, director, anything else you can think of, but especially creator of Above Board, which I'll let him explain a little bit more himself.
Glad to be here, gentlemen. How you guys doing today?
Pretty damn well.
Oh, me too.
I've had plenty of coffee.
I am in Phoenix, so it is very hot.
Ugh, how hot is it over there?
It's about 103 today.
Ugh, gosh.
Then that's downright chilly for Phoenix this time of year.
Downright chilly this time of year, yeah. Yes.
People are bundling up now, you know, going, how are we going to survive the weekend?
It's true. I was out back cutting some logs earlier with a chainsaw, and the lady next door, you know, as she always does, gives me that weird side eye because I'm wearing my Jason mask and, you know. Yeah.
And you're like 7'12" or something, however tall you are. It doesn't come across great on camera and probably on audio, but Adam is like, what are you, like 6'5" or something like that?
I am 6'7".
Even taller than I remember. Good Lord. Yeah.
The hottest summer I ever spent was my winter in Phoenix.
That's funny. I caught the tail end of a very steamy summer. I moved to Savannah, Georgia just for a little bit.
Oh, my goodness. That's.
Indiana was humid.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I did a project a million years ago now where I went to Georgia and I went to North Carolina for research purposes. It was, I believe it was for Atari, and it was for some game that revolved around Roanoke Island.
That never
came out. They paid me so much money for this thing. But anyway, I was there doing research, and it was like swimming. It was August.
Absolutely
and
not.
It was every time I got out of a car, it was just like going into a sauna. It was absolutely horrible. Mm-hmm. I don't know how people do that. It's a lot of humidity.
I can't imagine. I lived there for only a couple of months, just as my significant other was finishing college at SCAD. And every time I went out, I'm like, I'm not going out until 6 or 7 o'clock at night. There's no way. You can't catch me. We lived right above a coffee shop and right on Broughton. It was wonderful. So many great shops, but I never went out for lunch not once.
I felt the whole time like I was dressed in clothes made out of a wet nap. The
Always.
Entire time.
You got to peel everything off you at the end of the day.
Oh, my goodness. It was awful.
God forbid you got to go get your mail.
We have that to look forward to coming up here in Gen Con. So.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Indiana's not bad. Indiana's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not quite.
Well, I have to drive, so I get to hit all of the common resources of like, oh, yes, I must be in a place that it's very humid because I can't see outside of my car.
Sure.
But we have Travis here with us. Let's talk about what Travis is doing. Obviously, for those of you who do not know, Travis is, voice of Piglet from Disney, handful of wonderful other projects, knows everybody under the sun, even just talking to him before. I was like, oh, you know him. Wow. Okay. Do I need to sign a waiver or something to even talk to you?
It's actually funny because my son is just getting to the age. My son, Evan, shout out to him. His birthday is tomorrow.
Oh, wait, really?
Turning, yep.
It's my birthday's tomorrow.
Oh, my God. You have the same birthday as my son.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so excited to open new magic cards for my birthday. But anyway, go ahead.
He's turning 10 and he wants to go to Mario Land at Universal
of
Studios.
Course,
so that's my day tomorrow. What's funny about like who I know, he's just finally gotten to the age where he's kind of aware of what I do, really. Mm-hmm. And he was some SpongeBob SquarePants thing that he was doing.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, Dad, you know SpongeBob SquarePants. And I'm like, yeah. I actually know SpongeBob SquarePants. Yes, I know Tom Kenny, who is SpongeBob SquarePants. He's a friend of mine. He's Rabbit for Winnie the Pooh. Yes, mm-hmm. son, I know all about SpongeBob SquarePants. He's like, you know SpongeBob? And he was just blown away by the fact. Couldn't care less about what I actually do, the things that I've done. But the fact that I know SpongeBob all of a sudden puts me, you know, in a higher estimation.
Yeah, when we first spoke, I brought it up on like a, I don't remember how it came up, because I didn't know he was Rabbit either. Because Tom Kenny's literally everything. Anything you can think of, Tom Kenny had a hand in it.
Nice ton.
And him and Jim and everybody, Jim Cummings, like they're everything.
You do voiceover for a while, and you've worked, I mean, I've been doing voiceover for about 20 years now. And at some point, you get to know everybody, like all the famous people, especially like the big guys like Jim Cummings or, you know, all the Animaniacs folks. And
Frank Welker.
Just, Kathy Souza, who's tons and tons and tons of different voices. Nolan North.
Oh, you know, of course.
Who is, I believe, legally in every video game that's ever made.
So, in his contract, as a living human being, he has to be in every video game.
Yeah, you can't do a video game without Nolan. or a superhero cartoon series. He's in all of those. And after a while, you just know everybody because you do projects too, like Kingdom Hearts. It's got everybody in the world in it. Yeah. Like, you know, so, and, you know, they have premieres for those things and you meet them at those, you know. Most of the time with those big things, you're never in the room at the same time with them. They're usually individual sessions, but you still, you know, you're in the waiting room with them a lot. That's how you get to know these guys.
I meant to ask you that part of that process as well.
I don't know if I've ever done a piece with Nolan North where we've been like in a scene together ever, but I have talked with him for hours and hours and hours in the waiting room, waiting to go record something. Like, you know, I've gotten, you know, I he's one of those guys I knew really well, but, you know, because we had the same agent. So I would also see him at the agency if we were auditioning for something. And he would go in and get it and I wouldn't, you know.
Of course.
But
so this, you talked about going in for Kingdom Hearts. Did you just play Piglet in Kingdom Hearts, or was there anybody else as well?
I think there were a couple other characters that I did. For a lot of those games too, you do a couple different things. I may have done a few other other characters throughout the, you know, that were voiced. I don't remember. I mean, the big one they brought me in there for was Piglet. But
gotcha.
But
with that,
did you have fun? You know, kind of. I remember that at one point you were kind of. Going up against Mercer for Sephiroth or something.
Yeah, I did. I did go against Mercer for Sephiroth, and that worked out. How every time I've ever gone up against Mercer for anything, it went pretty much the same.
not for Piglet, though.
No. But he's.
Did he go out for Piglet?
No, he didn't.
Okay, I was like, I can't imagine. I don't know.
Maybe he did. Thousands of people went out for Piglet, so I have no idea who. But he's also he's got a more versatile voice. He has a lower voice for sure. Although for Sephiroth, what they were looking for was not, I don't think, a real low voice. At least that's because I know I was like high up there in the list, and so it couldn't have been. But he's fantastic at what he does. But yeah. There was a stretch there where I lost like 10 roles in a row to Matt Mercer. I was starting to curse his name. You know, I would hear like, oh, you know, you didn't get it. It was between you and another guy. Oh, who got it? Matt Mercer did. Oh, did he?
God dang
well, thank
it.
Goodness, because that guy needs work. I've never actually met him.
Really?
But I can hear he's the nicest guy in the world.
Everything I've seen, all the podcasts and stuff. And when he's like, you never know, like famous people, you know, are they being real? Right. And I'm sure you've come across this as well. Like, do you have like a face? Like when you're on a podcast or, you know, in an actual, in a booth or interacting with fans, is there like a face you put on or is it more of a.
Don't think so. I mean, I don't think like I put on a veneer of any kind.
Okay. Good.
But you know, I'm not like hounded like some of, you know, I have some good friends who are, I can go places very easily and, mm-hmm. and know most of the time, every once in a while, somebody will notice me, but, or recognize me, but most of the time, because most of what I do is hidden camera. You know, I'm not on camera when I'm doing it. Most of my most famous film and television roles are, you don't see me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I have to have that kind of thing because it doesn't come up a ton.
I see.
One of my best friends growing up and still a good friend now is Jeremy Renner.
Oh, wow.
And he can't go anywhere.
Of course not.
And that's not a joke. It's to his current circumstances. But I'm just saying, like, you can't go anywhere with him where people don't immediately recognize him and start, you know, crowding around him. And that's, you know, that's a rough thing. And I'm sure he has like a mode that he puts on, you know, when he's around the public, to try and, to deal with that, because it can be a little overwhelming.
But maybe that'll change here shortly with above board.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see. Yeah.
For people who don't know, can you give us a little bit of a synopsis? I looked on IMDb because I was going to read it off as I introduced you, but I didn't see a synopsis there either. So I'm curious how you'd describe it.
Yeah, yeah. So Above Board started out as a television show. Mm-hmm. Right now, it currently lives on YouTube, Above Board TV, on YouTube. But it started out as a television show, an hour-long TV show that's... the way we used to pitch it was Top Gear, but instead of being about cars, it was about board games and role-playing games. Because mm-hmm. It's really, it looks like it fits in the reality show genre, I guess, but it's not really a reality show because it's fully scripted. and it's really a sketch show. If you were to get down to the nuts and bolts of it, we do a bunch of different sketches and we do a humorous take on kind of the board game nerdscape stuff.
Yeah, it has almost it almost has an Eric Andre kind of format to it, where sure. it's very, and not, that's not to say for content, of course, but the feeling of the show is very much like organic, and your role as the
sure
opponent's kind of leader of the crew is really cool. I really enjoy that character that you do for the show, even though it's kind of you, but also kind of not.
Right. Yeah. I mean, everybody plays themselves on the show, but they play like enhanced versions of themselves, I guess is the way that I would put it.
Yes. Yeah. I've heard that described in the content creation world as a YouTube mode.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, kind of, you know, I mean, you know, if one of us is kind of dopey, we get dopier. If one of us is prone to fits of frustration, that it just all gets accelerated. So, and we definitely have people like who fell into certain roles. Also, part of it is just what they do comedically the best. Mm-hmm. You know, it's certain, you know, people have certain strengths, and so you play to those strengths, and then their persona becomes a part of that. So basically the central conceit of it is that there are two hosts. There's myself, and I'm the hardcore gamer. And then there's Leif Ganfort, who is what we call internally the Walmart gamer. Basically somebody who they go to Walmart or Target or some big box store, and that's where they get all the games that they play.
Ooh, support your LGS.
Exactly. And speaking of LGS, we have a whole thing on the show where we go to friendly local game stores. Yep. We just visited one in Oklahoma and Canada just last week.
My favorite one that you guys did was the Castle in, I think it's Colorado.
Colorado, yeah.
Yep. Denver,
Colorado.
That was one of the coolest like walkthroughs of a board game store I've ever seen.
And that one isn't out online yet, but the one that's online now, I think, is Pieces right now from St. Louis.
Ooh. Very cool. So,
but yeah, we have a lot of those that we've gone and done. So the idea behind it was how those two worlds collide, and to show and reach out to those the mass market gaming crowd that there's this whole other weird, fantastical world of more complex games that exist out there and to try and like bring them into the fold. So it's a very, the show, maybe to some people's consternation online, although we haven't really run into this too much yet, but we do a lot of stuff with mass market games as well as the hardcore stuff. You know, we'll do stuff with Frosthaven and the CMON games and stuff like that, but we'll also do stuff with Uno and we'll do stuff with Operation and things like that. But it's all sketch comedy mostly. And it's, we don't take ourselves too seriously with it. We have two rules. We have rule one, our Federation, prime directive, is never make fun of the game and never make fun of the gamer. So as long as we don't do that, we can have fun with it. Now we often make fun of ourselves. You know, we did this whole thing about analysis paralysis and Leaf having analysis paralysis. So anything that would normally make fun of a gamer for some idiosyncrasy, it's aimed at ourselves. We always aim the funny gun at us so that, you know, nobody feels like we're attacking them. Yeah, and we never make fun of the game unless it's in ways that they enjoy or acknowledge. Like,
yeah, I was actually going to ask, how do you determine what makes fun of the game versus, hey, just an in-joke, right?
Well, for example, we have this thing called Versus on the show where you take two different games that are very different from each other and you have two people argue their merits. Mm-hmm. And I think the one that is online right now is Gloom versus Gloomhaven. and they basically throw out things, you know, why their game is better than the other person's game. And for Gloomhaven, the Gloom guy was like, Gloom is made of, I don't know how many it says in the thing, of transparent, cards. And his says, Gloomhaven was, constructed, from a fully grown redwood, and things that they throw out, Gloomhaven, the box can be used as a crib. and stuff like that. So making fun of how big Gloomhaven is or how long it takes to play, Twilight Imperium,
yes.
You know, those are making fun of the game so much as, at least not in ways that the people who make those games would not acknowledge and see as in good humor.
I'm sure Isaac would appreciate you saying he has a very long and well thought out story.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and giant box of a game.
And Isaac Childress, you're going to see him all over the channel. He's a good friend, and he, it's my Gloomhaven's my favorite game of all time, and we did all kinds of stuff with him. We just shot in Vegas. It's not out yet, but it's coming out soon. The Broadway cast of Frozen play Frosthaven. So we got some of the folks. Yeah, we got some of the Broadway cast of Frozen to come and sit down with us and play Frosthaven, and that's one of the new series of that we have out on Above Board, where it's kind of like Hot Ones, if you've ever seen that. Yeah, where
that's kind of what the theory for this show was as well.
Yeah, and so we basically play a game while I'm interviewing them about their life and their career, and the game usually has something to do. And Isaac Childress actually wrote a scenario specifically for the folks from Frozen. So there's a lot of things in it that seem very familiar to them for the Frozen story.
Speaking of Frosthaven, it was a really great time working with you, doing all the different parts. And I think that, he turned out to be one of the coolest characters in my opinion.
Oh, thank you.
The storyline and everything was obviously very well written, but the characterization I think really brought forward that. So have you encountered your character in your playthrough of Frosthaven yet? Or?
So the only, and this is the downside of doing, and I'm sure other people who have like a YouTube channel feel this. I played Frosthaven getting ready for Frozen versus Frozen plays Frosthaven. We played it every day for a week to get ready for it. Cause I also had to run the game and I had to run the game in front of Isaac Childress on camera.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to know the game as best. And by the way, every time I got something wrong, Isaac was right there. He jumped right on me. He's like, no, that's not how that works.
I've not met Isaac yet, but that seems like the kind of fella he is.
He's like, what's funny is he's the lowest key guy. So getting like your butt handed to you from Isaac Childress is like it's a very slow and methodical burn.
He destroyed me at a game about trains where you argue about ore. I can't remember the name of the game, but it's one of those really slick Euros.
A game about trains. That could only be one like or two games. Things, I'm sure they're not a lot of
Raccoon Tycoon
It's not Ticket to Ride. It's like I think it's called like 1800 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there is one called
Oh my God, getting absolutely, you have no idea, man, like the numbers and just the decimation that happened. I've never lost a board game so heartily in my life. And you're like, well, and he just kind of looked, oh no, then he destroyed me at Terraforming Mars. Oh my God, I've never seen somebody score so high in that game. I got 64. Like, that's not even good.
Travis had somebody special come in the room.
Yeah, I just want to can you come in here for a second? I know you have to go, but
do you got
me? Are you on the?
You gotta lean over just a little. Yeah, share the mic. Act like you love each other.
We do.
Well, everybody, of course, we've got the other co-host of the other host of Above Board, Leaf. Hello, introduce yourself a little bit. Tell us who you are.
Leaf Gantfort, and like you said, I am a co-host with this guy here on Above Board.
All right.
Where we're going various adventures in the gaming world.
So we're kind of talking about everybody's favorite game. What's your favorite game, Leaf? Big decision.
For now, I'll say The Thing, since I'm wearing The Thing hat.
Interesting. The Thing. I have not played the game.
Yeah, you really the board liked game. That game. Yeah,
I've not played the board game for that. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It's
I
great.
Recently
it's,
saw the movie, actually.
Recently?
Recently, yeah. I turn 25 tomorrow, if that means anything.
Okay. No, that's fine. How was it for you? Amazing. I'm always interested.
Oh,
okay,
my
good.
God. I typically do not like any movie that's older than I am, or at least feels like it is.
We were talking about how I know a crazy number of people. Mm-hmm. Rob Bottin is a friend of mine, and he's the guy who did all the special effects for The Thing. And he was.
And they hold up to this day.
He was like 20 or 21 when he did it. He was super, super young. He didn't have any idea what he was doing. He was just, he was running around by the seat of his pants. It's really funny to hear the stories of him doing that. And just like, I guess this will work. And part of the reason I think some of the stuff that he did in that movie was so outside the box is he just didn't know that that's not what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't know the industry way to do it. So he found a way to do it.
Yeah.
That's often where creativity lies, is lack of knowledge.
Yeah. So are you enjoying the project so far, doing the whole like rebuild of the studio and everything?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of work, you know. We're still kind of, I feel like we're in constant catch-up mode, and I don't know that we ever will catch up. You know, like even today, like I feel like I've spent hours here and I haven't gotten anything done.
Yeah.
So
I think part of it is once we're not building the physical space anymore, I think it'll feel a little bit better, but right now, yeah. Cause we have to still make a show happen.
Yeah.
So we have to still have, we need to at least produce one video a week, new, and what, and we're releasing. So basically what you're seeing, those of you out there who've watched the channel, is there's a video that's new and a video that's old. Generally, that's the way it's done every week. So we have to make at least one new video a week, but
because, they're new to you, though.
Yeah, they're new to you. But because we don't just, I was going to say something that sounded insulting to other, and I don't mean it this way, but it takes us a long time to make it. We are producing stuff like a film company would produce stuff. Mm-hmm. So we can't just sit.
We're not just
camera.
Rolling cameras on us sitting in front of it. Like we are actually producing films.
Yeah. So it's a production. You know, we have to get it and then we put it onto post, and it's fascinating.
Yeah. Like I was editing for 3 hours this morning. Then I was writing for an hour, and then I come here and I'm building the studio for another 2 hours, and my day's not even done. Now I have to go to set and actually do my, other job, which is acting for a production company later today down at Sony. And then after I get done with that, then I'm going to go to my practice for roller derby. So it's a full day.
Very busy day. Do you have time to eat? That's the most important thing.
No, no.
Okay. That's why he's so thin and I'm so fat. he leaves the room and I'm like, well, I guess he's not going to eat this.
And since we have both of you on here for a second still, you mentioned you still have to make the show. And is the show impacted by the writer strike? Or I don't want you guys to feel like you're forced to make a statement on this, but are you impacted by it?
I mean, the whole city right now is impacted. You know what I mean? So like to say that it doesn't have an effect is not exactly true, but is it affecting us 100%? No, not at this point.
There are only two of us in the entire organization that are WGA. It's myself and Miles.
Okay. And anything that we're shooting right now was written previously.
Yeah. So there's no writing happening at this moment.
No. And when I say I'm writing, like it's not for this show. Like it's for other projects. And again, I'm not in the guild.
He's in the guild, so you can write.
I'm not in the guild, so yeah, I can write.
Okay. And really, what the guild is striking against has nothing to do with us. It's
AI.
It doesn't really fall in the It's not. They're not worried about new media. They're worried about streaming.
Right.
So we don't fall into that category.
But we're not big dogs yet.
yet.
Now, I didn't direct the film that I was supposed to direct.
Because of that one,
Because of the writer's strike. Yeah. So there are. It has impacted the two of us because we have professional careers outside of doing above board. Above board is ironically our side gig.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to make money to pay for all this stuff. So
of course. It's just like voice actors as well. You know, you got to take that commercial gig for whatever drug so you can, you know, get paid peanuts to do the fun character that you've always wanted to.
Right. That's why you did that whole campaign for crack, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's why I'm addicted to crack now.
That's the only reason.
And I want to clarify, it's not crack cocaine. It's a different kind of crack. So
yeah. And I would also like to clarify, it's because I enjoy it.
Yeah. It's not forced into doing it.
Yeah. Well, being forced into crack is not. You know.
No, it's it's the cardboard crack. Or do you play Warhammer?
About to get into Warhammer. Yeah, he's thinking about.
You know, and this is the funny thing too. We were talking about how the personas on the show are kind of amplified, and so he is technically the guy between the two of us that doesn't know as much about games. Mm-hmm. But of course, we've been doing this for 4 years now.
Yeah.
The pandemic is like a 2-year break, but technically it's been 4 years. He knows a lot about games now. Like,
you have to.
It's kind of funny.
I can't plead naivete the way I used to.
Yeah, we try to keep that on video. We try to keep up the idea that, and I still probably know more, but not as much as it used. It used to be pretty real.
I mean, I did say my favorite game is The Thing, you were like, "What game is that?" So like, I know some deep cuts.
And I was wondering when he asked that, I'm like, "So is Leaf gonna play the Leaf character and say that his favorite game is like
Wits and Wagers,
or something?" Catan, yeah. But you do like more mass market games than I do, for sure.
Sure, yeah, because I typically play in larger groups, and oftentimes, like the mass market games cater to larger
party
groups.
You play a lot more party games than I do, for sure. Yeah,
yeah, we were, it's funny. We were talking about this the other day, where if you had to make a board game into a movie, right? Like, which one do you choose? And some of the adventure games are like really like it's like too easy, right? Like you don't make you can make a Dungeons and Dragons movie, but
I can tell you which one you probably shouldn't make into a movie. Battleship.
That would be a simple process, right?
just saying that if you did that, it might go horribly.
It might be a mistake. It might be something you look back on and go, we shouldn't have done that.
Right. Yeah. We could have made Checkers the movie, as one of my sound designers has suggested, where it's very much so ships bouncing over each other.
So I don't think I can tell you, because I think I was under NDA, but you wouldn't believe, because I'm a professional. Most of the money that I make as a professional writer.
Okay.
Mattel, I don't think I'll get in trouble for saying this. So there was a point where Mattel was reaching out to me to potentially write a movie based on their products. Barbie, by the way, is one of the films that came from that grouping of, they didn't ask me to write Barbie, but you wouldn't believe some of the games that they were looking to make a movie out of.
Interesting.
It was...
Does Mattel own Avalon Hill?
I don't think so.
Okay.
They might. I don't, but no, I don't is think that so.
Hasbro?
Hasbro probably owns
Avalon. Hasbro. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. But yeah, you wouldn't, you'd just be shocked at some of the board games that they're trying to make something. And you get this list and you go, okay, all right, let's see if I can come up with something. See if I can, you know, you make a joke about checkers. But you know, you go, okay, I'm gonna make checkers talent. The movie. Yeah.
I think if I had to choose one, it would be life. One, because I play a character called the Sad Skull all the time, and death and life are kind of opposing forces. So I think it'd be kind of unique to me, but I do think it would make like a good series, right? Like it's about like a guy and he keeps pulling cards and then stuff just keeps happening to him.
I'll greenlight that.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
I'll watch it.
Sure.
I'm a big magic head. And I think all the work.
Oh, no way, dude.
You don't think magic would be a good story?
No way. No. There's way too many planes.
I was going to say, like,
No. You make it a series.
But it's such a complex world. Like, how do you bring people into it?
They've done a number of novels. And some of them are pretty good. Not all of them, but I mean, most of them are pretty good. And by the way, you were asking earlier, and you might be a good person here to kind of reinforce this. What's the difference between making fun of the game and gently ribbing the game?
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that we don't ever do is like make it seem like that game is a bad game.
I see. Okay.
So it's never a thing of like where we make fun of how bad a particular game is or how lame the idea of the game is or how some mechanic is poorly implemented. We stay away from that. It's one of the reasons why we don't review games at all on the side. But then that was a decision we made day one. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't want to review games. We will feature games and we'll only feature games that we enjoy and think are good, but we don't pass judgment on games. Cause here's the whole thing. Because with what we're trying to do with the channel is bring in new people into the environment. Mm-hmm. We don't want the first thing that they see about this grand and glorious like world of indie gaming to be, oh, this game is a pile of crap. Right. That doesn't necessarily
a bickering.
right. And that doesn't necessarily make them go, oh boy, I should really get into this hobby.
Because I think the other dynamic that kind of plays into it is like the more artistic you become in your life, the less judgmental you are of other people's attempt to be artistic.
Right.
There's still fallibility, but I think you find that that's within the intent and not the product.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so I think it's easy to make fun of ourselves playing a game, and it's not necessarily because the game is bad, it's because it's easier to point that we're bad the game.
For example, if we had a game that had a mechanic that was humorous in how broken or difficult it was, rather than like it would be us not getting that rule or something, and it'd be we're always, if we want to be, if anything is silly or stupid or broken, it's us. Like we're the ones that are too dumb to figure out the rule or too dumb to like.
That's play not the game always properly. The truth, but it's easy to make fun of it that way.
That way it doesn't feel like we're making fun of the game or making fun of our own inadequacies.
Yes.
Yeah. The game.
Honestly, I think it's funnier that way. I think there's more material definitely for us to mine in that sense. So that's why it's always been our approach to do it that way.
Now we do sometimes ride that line.
Yes.
Especially with
Hasbro games. Simply because they're the big dog. So, you know, you never punch down, but it's okay to punch up.
Yeah.
In the pilot episode that I showed you not many people have seen the actual pilot of the actual show. Not just what's being turned into the segments for the YouTube channel.
Right.
But we have that whole thing about the Monopoly corner. Yeah. So one of our characters who plays the intern, we send him to the Monopoly corner, and if you do something bad, you have to go to the corner and play Monopoly. So obviously the inference there is that that's a punishment, playing Monopoly. But by the end of the thing, we also have somebody on that loves Monopoly, and they're really excited to play Monopoly, and they end up winning the game. And it, you know, so we try to, you know, even though we're like poking fun at it, we try not to at least have teeth, I guess, with what we're doing.
So you know how there's like a million versions of Monopoly, right? Like all sorts of kinds.
Oh yeah.
Do you have a favorite Monopoly game? Just to kind of smooth that transition over.
Monopoly. Here's the thing. I honestly, as much as it is maligned, I don't terribly hate Monopoly. Like, it's still something that I'm willing to play if somebody's like, hey, you want to play Monopoly? I'm like, yeah, let's play Monopoly. That's better than not playing a game.
I have fond memories of Monopoly just because my father and I played when I was young. It was just one of the games that we played. So I have very fond memories of that part of it. I don't think we were playing it right. I don't know if anybody's playing it right.
I was going to say, and there's something I read recently where nobody has ever played it right. Like, since the inception of the game, nobody has ever played it right. Like, its intent was 100% different than how we approached the game.
I can't think of a themed Monopoly that I've really, but I will say there's a themed Risk. The Game of Thrones Risk.
Yes, great. It was very good.
We were shocked how good that game, when that came in, and we were like, oh, you know, we wanted to like feature one of the mass market games. We were shocked how much we liked Game of Thrones.
I would play that again.
Yeah, that was really good, and it felt like Game of Thrones. It they changed it enough to like have it truly feel like it wasn't just Risk. Mm-hmm.
Metal Gear Solid has a good one.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. Also, a Halo.
You get Metal Gear Rex.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Game of Nuclear Determined.
10, 12 years ago, I got a Halo Risk as a birthday present, funny enough. And all the different pieces were like kind of clear see-through plastic. And you got like the Ghost and like the Scorpion tanks and everything as your cavalry units. It was really cool.
That was probably the op, because the op makes most of that stuff. I think they do a really good job with that theme stuff.
It sells again.
Yeah, like, but I mean, I sometimes think that they're discounted because, you know, they're just you know, turning out these IP oriented Hasbro games. But I think most people don't give that stuff a chance. Like, I'll admit, I'm one of those snobby kind of folks that you know, kind of poo-poos, that's easily dismissive of that stuff, and I playing Game of Thrones Risk didn't make me wonder how many of these games
are you just
am I missing out on because I'm just assuming.
Well,
you know,
I'll tell you, I got a copy of, it was Baby Yoda, it was Grogu Monopoly.
Okay.
As a, it was a Christmas time sale they were having, and said, "Oh, if you spend over $50 at my LGS, they're going to give you a free copy of this, you know, Mando, not really Mando, specifically Baby Yoda, Grogu themed Monopoly." And I'm like, "Okay, cool, I'll give it a try." And they didn't add anything to Monopoly; they took away everything, and it didn't change like the play ratings, like the age recommendation on it. They took, like, there's like pieces missing, like spots on the board. It is a shorter board and there's less cards, and it is a stripped down version. And instead of like states or, you know, the street names, it's like him holding a bunny or something, like it, or not a bunny, it wouldn't be a bunny, but some sort of little alien, or like him holding the frog. And I honestly thought, like, why is this not like a Monopoly Junior title?
Yeah, it probably, maybe at some point they intended that to be the case, and then Grogu blew up to the point that they were like, we'll just kind of...
Because it's straight up.
Was it better than Monopoly?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Because all of my hardcore gamer knowledge of like, okay, if I roll this, I can get on Indiana. Sure. If I buy Indiana, it's the most limited on space in the game, or Indiana or Kentucky, one of the two. But like, I don't... all my math is wrong now for how to play Monopoly.
I don't want to make you late.
Yeah, I got to.
But thank you for joining us. Thank
you. I did want to pull you in at some point. I talk so much about you. So
okay.
You wouldn't stop, well, honestly.
Thank you so much, man.
Thanks.
I couldn't do the show without him. He's a fantastic writer, director, and editor. He's a fun guy to work with.
That buttery smooth voice, my God, I get to work. I hope I get to work with you someday, sir.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Well,
okay. Do you have 2 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, Adam. Right. And I know I said I started it with bullshit, but you can pick up it. Hyde has the finest city.
Leaf doesn't mind swearing. Leaf killed Uncle Ben, so he'll do anything.
He killed Uncle Ben.
Yeah, Leaf was in the middle Spider-Man with
Garfield.
Andrew Garfield.
Wow.
So and he was the one who killed Uncle Ben in that movie.
Amazing. I had no idea.
Yeah nobody does.
He's really helped his career.
All right, he's not on camera right now because they're still working on their setup, but we're gonna do our little impromptu audition here. Because Adam mentioned the buttery voice of Leif. So we've pulled up a character from named Damocles Hyde. He's a prince from one of the areas located in the wonderful game Madara from Succubus, game Succubus Publishing. So I've tried my hand at Damocles. Now we've heard Leif, though, so I want to hear how you can roll this line off that tongue. Let's see.
All right. Bullshit. Hyde has the finest city watch on Halitus. What other city has been standing up to the Blight for 3 decades? I'm telling you, if the watch didn't see anything, then there's nothing to see. Knowing how to swing a sword at obvious targets does not mean they have the eye for detail. That's a talent you can't train. You need to be born with it. From those answers, they weren't.
Oh,
okay. Take off my headphones. Okay. Hold on. Yeah.
That was a dreamy take. My goodness.
Very.
My goodness.
Very. Oh, I loved it.
I've never been told that anything I do is dreamy.
Really? So welcome to the party.
Yes. Perfect fit for Damocles. You know.
Yeah. Really great take, man. I mean, hey, you know, you have a great potential. Have you ever thought about acting?
He thinks about it all the time.
I think about it every day that I wake up.
That's the problem. All right, man.
All right, that's what I actually have to go do now.
Okay. Enjoy. Thank you so much for.
All right, thank you both. It was fun. Let's do it again sometime.
Yeah, please.
And don't worry, Travis. We'll have one for you as well.
Yeah, no problem.
But that was amazing. Again, thank you for bringing him in here to, you know, just.
Oh yeah, yeah. He happened to be here, and he's phenomenal. He has partnered with me in various different things. If you see the movie I directed a few years back called Don't Blink, he's in that. He's a phenomenal actor, but he's even better than an actor. He's a phenomenal director in his own right. Mm-hmm. He just recently directed a film that. I think it's phenomenal that just won a couple awards.
Whoa. What was it?
I think one.
I had to put you on the spot. Sorry.
What is his film called? Because it's an odd. It's an odd name. Something like that. That something movie. It's a generic title, and I don't remember what it is right now. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I've only seen it once with the title. Right. I've seen it in its various different forms.
Yeah.
But it won the Pasadena International Film Festival just recently. And actually Gen Con has a film festival. It's going to be in the Gen Con Film Festival.
Fantastic. So we'll get to see it then. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Cause everybody who doesn't know, we are planning our Gen Con, stuff here at Foreteller. I actually just put a couple of proposals out today for various things. You know, we're going to have, some live music at our party, of course. It's going to be so much fun. Of course, Travis, I know you said you were going to be there.
Absolutely.
At least at Gen Con. So
we're going to be there in a very big way, actually. We're one of the main sponsors of Gen Con. And we will be having a huge show on the main stage with some fairly big celebrity guests that I'm not quite at the point where I can officially announce, but there, I think people will be surprised at some of the names that we're bringing.
Amazing.
And we're basically doing a live version of our show. We're doing live sketches and bits. Yeah.
Dude, yeah. I can't admit, this is awesome because you literally, like, so when I first met you, Travis, like, you were talking about doing this potentially, but because of COVID, there was like no way. But it's so cool to see it all line up like a couple of years later. Like, wow, yeah. Dude, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Man, are you guys thinking about coming into the Foreteller after party? I'd love to.
Yeah, man. Unless there's some weird reason why I can, I'm there.
Sweet.
Cool, man.
I'm there.
Yeah, we're gonna have a good old time. We're still confirming exactly, just like you. We're not quite ready to say what's going on yet, but
I was telling you the last time, but we have some fun ideas of some things we'd like to do with Foreteller on the show, like sketches involving Foreteller.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a lot of fun. We're putting something together.
Yeah, where the Foreteller app is making value judgments on some of the things that some of the decisions we're making.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, that would be so perfect.
Yeah.
I could just imagine like somebody just wheeling out a big cardboard cutout of a phone and just a speaker saying something like, "I can't believe you chose to go after the old man."
Exactly.
You've done it again.
But
Gen Con's going to be a blast. And are you guys going to have like a booth, like specifically on the con floor?
So we won't have a booth because we're not really selling anything per se, at least not this con. Right. We'll have merchandise and stuff, but I think we're giving that away mostly. Mm-hmm. We will be having pop-ups throughout Gen Con where we'll be giving away free food. So randomly we'll just pop up somewhere and be giving away free ice cream for like 15 minutes. To anybody who wants free ice cream then pop up somewhere else and be giving free like plates of muffins and stuff. So we're doing a bunch of that kind of stuff. Unless SAG goes on strike, we will be filming at Gen Con.
Yeah.
we'll see. We're really hoping SAG doesn't go on strike. You were asking if the WGA affects us. Not so much. If SAG goes on strike, that affects us a bit.
Yeah, everybody. Everybody.
Every single person here is in SAG. So. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So that's a much bigger problem.
We actually just part of the National Audio. God, they're going to kill me because I don't know this. Bonnie, the part of that organization, we met Andrea Ems on a panel. The two of us were on an AI related panel for the Here Now Festival. And she was telling me a lot of stuff about SAG and, you know, they prepared a statement for her as well, for AI working with AI companies. And
sure.
So, I know that's a big concern, especially.
It's a weird time for me because I'm in SAG, the WGA, mm-hmm. the DGA and, the producers, association. So I'm a member of all of the different parties involved in all of these strikes and all of these negotiations. Yeah. So it's a fun period of time for me, and I'm trying to stay as neutral as I possibly can. Although
because they're all linked,
the Producers Guild won't like that I'm saying this, but I probably am leaning a little bit more toward the actors and the writers. But it's a fun time right now. That's for sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't even know what that process looks like, but we do wish you luck, man. You know, I mean, that's all, you know, it's a big deal. I mean, even though we're joking about it, it's, you know, when you are part of that world, like it's an organization that does control quite a bit of your life. So.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we are planning that if the strike happens, it just depends on how long it goes, but we have shot a lot in the last 2 months to hopefully be able to still put out new material and weather the storm. But
if you ever need a writer who has nothing to do with any guilds.
Sure. It's not so much the writer, it's the actors.
We'll fly out there.
Exactly. Know? Exactly.
We're not as good as some people.
The irony is
I'm not as pretty as
The irony is that, you know, the biggest thing that we're building in our studio, the one thing that I think is going to blow everyone away when they start to see footage from the pieces we're doing with it, mm-hmm. is this AR studio. We're going to be one of Right. Only two studios in all of Los Angeles that has the capability that we'll have when we're done. The irony is, of course, we think that studio will be ready. That part of the studio will finally be ready to do shoot stuff in July, which yeah. would be right when that strike might start. But if nothing else, we'll really learn the technology really well and do a lot of testing, I guess, so that when we can finally do stuff, we can do it. But yeah, I think that's going to the AR technology that we're building here. I think when people see it and see how different what the kind of stuff that we're going to be turning out for things like a playthrough or we're thinking about doing a D&D campaign. Oh. It's going to look completely unlike anything anybody's ever seen before. So it's I'm very excited to see that technology come to fruition. We are blessed we have two very amazing, and I don't know if I have permission to say their names, but two very amazing artists who are helping us put that together. One of which actually helped create this technology for Avatar.
Wow!
For the movie Avatar. It's going to be pretty awesome when we're done. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first time you explained what you're hoping this will look like, my brain immediately went to Whose Line Is It Anyway? And Colin Mockery standing in front of a green screen, trying to figure out where he is.
But so, and that's what most people are thinking. Like they're thinking just kind of like an advanced green screen,
right?
But what this will look like, it's very hard to explain when I show people, because I can show people footage of what the other studio in town that can do this,
right.
what their demo is. And then it blows people away because it doesn't look like a green screen, because on a green screen is a flat plane. But this is as if you had a green screen around you 360 degrees and the camera can move and rack focus on things that aren't there. So it's like stepping into a holodeck. Oh, wow. The camera is basically stepping into a holodeck that the actors can't necessarily see around them, but they can see on monitors. But it is a fully realized environment that is in three dimensions that they can interact with. I mean, it's astounding when you see what you can do with it. It's like I said, I think whatever people have in their brains, it's gonna be a lot. A lot take more it, impressive than that.
Take it there and go a couple notches happen. More.
Yeah.
That must be really difficult to direct, right? Like, I mean, because you can do anything, really. Like,
yeah,
so you're,
I mean,
like,
yeah. I mean, it'll be very interesting to see. I mean, we've done some tests, but you know, we still don't have all the components in place to do it the way that we're going to be doing it. So we'll have two large monitors on the stage, so you can kind of see where the actors are placed and everything. And the way that it works is it works with the Unreal Engine,
right?
Unreal 5.2. And we have a robotic, it's like a $180,000 robotic arm that whose camera is duplicated in the Unreal environment. So wherever the camera moves, the camera in Unreal moves along with it at exactly the same moment. So the camera can move around the actors and it can look up into the air and down on the floor. Everything is that new reality that the camera is in. And then it's superimposing those actors in real time within that environment. So you even see the shadows of the actors. You see the actors exist in that environment. And we just have to light it properly so that it looks like they're lit in that within that environment.
Because that was one of the biggest updates for UE 5.2 was the lighting. I saw a handful of really cool videos from Corridor Digital and a couple other sources detailing, transparent lighting through objects and refracting as well onto, you know, through water as well. Because water, for the longest time, has been one of the hardest things to portray on film. I think in Star Wars, the episode 2 on Naboo, you can see like a waterfall in the background. Right. And they're like, well, how do we make that? What they did is they just from far away poured some salt down to create the effect of the rushing water. And that's how they did it. And then in Lord of the Rings as well, they talked about, I think it's Lord of the Rings, that where the horses come down the river. And that effect was painstaking. But with the new UE5 stuff. Right. It's kind of crazy the stuff you can do with it.
And what would it allow us to do from like a sketch perspective and what we're doing mm-hmm. is if we want to do a piece where two soldiers are arguing about what to do in the middle of a Warhammer game, we can look like we're on a battlefield in suits That's of so- armor from Warhammer arguing about what we're doing, you know, within the game. So all these sketches, any sketch that takes you inside of fantasy or science fiction or any kind of fantastical world, we can step into that world in a heartbeat and just do the piece.
And that's going to be so much fun. You can, oh man, I can't even imagine the comedy stuff you're going to come up with.
Yeah, it's going to look pretty incredible. We have spent well over $500,000 to have that effect at our fingertips. So,
I'm sure that you're going to have people coming out of the woodworks just to use the studio, kind of like the sound studios, you know?
I hope so, because we spent $500,000 to get it up and running. So,
we'll use studio there.
Because I'll tell you, we won't be getting it back from YouTube. Yeah. So I'm really hoping that that we'll get some rentals in here for sure.
A buddy of mine who's out there working on films as well, he said majority of the money you make in that industry is not from you purchasing your own gear and using it on films. It's you purchasing your own gear and letting other people use it.
Yep, very true. We're literally the only person in Los Angeles that has that particular robot. Mm-hmm. So we've already rented that out to Paramount.
Wow.
Because we're the only ones with it. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty astounding piece of technology. And so, I think and we haven't even advertised that we have it yet. So we're not quite ready to advertise as soon as we have it all up and running. Yeah. I'm hoping that people, the two folks who are helping us build it are saying that people would be beating down our doors to use it.
I can't imagine the level of interest people would have.
I mean, I would love to take a stab at it, but that seems probably out of my price range.
If you guys are ever in Los Angeles, man, please at least come in and let me show you around and I'll throw you in the moon or something.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Moon's haunted. Moon's haunted, guys.
Moon's haunted.
That's all I want to do.
Put a sad skull on the moon.
Yep. But, so speaking of new developments, right? Is there anything on your Kickstarter horizon that you're ready to kind of get your hands on?
Oh, well, I mean the giant Gloomhaven, it's not Kickstarter, I guess it's
5 days.
Backer kit.
5 days Gloomhaven Festival, the Grand Festival.
Yeah. So obviously that's on my radar. I'm trying to think of any recent Kickstarters that I've been, oh my God, that's fantastic. I mean, I'm sure there are ones coming up. I have a bunch of ones that I'm dying to come in. Mm-hmm, yeah. Agamonia is one of them that I'm dying to get in.
Have you seen Studium No Exit yet?
No, I haven't. Although I do want to tell the guys, that does not look like an O on No. That's my biggest issue with that. It looks like knee. Looks like knee exit every time I see it. I think it looks like an E or something.
Interesting.
I've had a really hard time figuring out, and they go, "Oh, it's No Exit." That's
knee. Yeah, exit. I had the same kind of response to Kinfire Chronicles. Like I was like, "What is that logo?" And then I was like, "Oh, the N is in there." It was like the first time I realized the FedEx logo had an arrow.
Yeah. I did not know that as a kid for so long.
Isn't that funny?
But Studium's a lot of fun. We did a live stream with Mac and the characters in it, man. Oh man, that even might be something that you want to do because it's a lot of fun. The characters are all so bizarrely written and they're so gross and hilarious that I think you'd enjoy it.
And something that Mac has really been making sure people understand for Studium is it has all the gameplay elements that everybody wants. Everybody wants to know how the game plays. But the thing he's really pushing is how it feels to be in that universe. Sure. So games push their narratives, you know, as a way to get you to the next gameplay scenario. The gameplay scenario is what happens because of the narrative in his game.
It's interesting to see, because obviously video games have always had a very immersive quality to them. And they're getting more and more so as they become more and more realistic. But it's interesting to see the same thing start to happen with board games where you do have these grand productions. You guys are a big part of that. You've kind of become the, what was I saying when I was explaining to Leaf who you guys were, kind of the game trays for me for audio. And that, like, it feels like every game, you know, that really wants to impress has you guys doing their sound. And it's neat to see that we've stepped into this new kind of era where board games have decided, yeah, we can be immersive too. And we can really emotionally affect you. Cause that's pretty hard to do with a board game. I think there's only one time I've ever cried playing a board game from the content of what was happening in the board game. And that was, I was from Awakened Realms. That was This War of Mine. Which, if you haven't played it, it's just brutal. It's based on a video game, which maybe, you know, part of why that, because that's actually was quite a few years ago when it came out. Now it's 4 or 5 years. But yeah, that was the only time.
Sometimes those just sneak up on you too. And I don't want to keep plugging our own stuff too much. Love you guys. But just because I was writing the scripts for Madara, I went through that so many times. And I was letting the guys know in Discord, hey, I had to stop working because something hit me so hard. And I can't say what it is. But
sure,
the part, like, I cannot wait. Have we released who's voice acting yet?
No, not quite yet. No.
Okay. Well, everyone knows that Julie is the narrator. That is what I'm allowed to say.
Julie is the narrator.
I cannot wait.
She was the original narrator from the first one?
Correct. That's why we're allowed to say that. I cannot wait to hear some of Julie's work when it's fully mastered and everything.
And Madara was the first one you guys did, right? The first Madara was kind of like, that was your first...
So, the way that ended up kind of panning out was that they had already done the audio.
Oh, they had done the audio. Yeah. That's right.
And
that's
so we just took it and cleaned it up a bit. And they wanted to put it on our application because actually our first game was Gloomhaven. It all stems from, you know, a love for Isaac again, you know, and I have nothing but it's the reason I met you, Price. You have a mutual buddy, Price. And he's
in one of those recent videos. The video we put out on Monday has Price in it, actually.
I saw a tweet from Ross saying that him and Price and Isaac were hanging out with somebody. Yeah,
it's our ode to Vegas and gangster movies. It's called Gamester.
I am so jealous that the four of you guys were in the same room doing cool stuff. That is so, that's awesome. Man. But I'm so proud of you, dude. Like all the stuff that you do. And, you know, I think it's one of those things that, like, you know, sometimes somebody is such a big personality and such a big, you know, part of a whole bunch of different projects and realms that their passion projects get left by the wayside. And I'm really happy to see you taking your idea and just going full throttle with it right into the curb. Like, doesn't matter. We're going over it. And, you know, COVID was a big curb, dude. And,
well, you know, it's also one of those things where another one of my partners, by the way, in all this is Corey Thompson, who some people out there might know him more as he does news for the Dice Tower. The reason we're doing new material right now is because Corey Thompson at BGGCon this last year, you know, I was telling him, yeah, I'm going to probably put stuff out on YouTube. And he's like, well, would you be up to putting new stuff out on YouTube? Because he was at the studio audience when we shot all the original shows in front of a live studio audience. And he's like, you know, it was just amazing. And we really felt that you were pushing the genre, the board game industry forward in a way that hadn't been done before. And so it's like, you know, would you be open to doing new material as well as, you know, the old material? And I'm like, you got a couple $1 million on you, because that's how much it cost me before. And this is my production company. So when I say me, I mean me. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, actually I do. And it turns out he's a multimillionaire.
Oh, wow.
And he just really wants to do something fun and enjoyable with his money. And he's got such a love for this industry. And so when I say this place cost $500,000 to build that was actually Corey who stepped in and spent that. And a lot of the new stuff that we're producing right now, we're producing because of Corey. So it's it takes a village. You definitely started, this whole thing started out as definitely a gleam in my eye and perseverance and, you know, sweat on my part, but there's so many people that have brought us to this point. And you know, I just, I'm blessed to be able to work with all of them and hopefully, in the end I can do them justice and hopefully this thing will catch fire eventually.
Yeah. Is there anybody else that you want to, that you're able to shout out as a part of your project?
Oh, I mean, like, there's just so many folks. I mean, all of the different actors, that are involved in there, there are so many people that put this thing together. I would like to mention one name, Jared Carnevale, who was one of the producers of this show, and was my costumer for 10 years. And I just want to give him a shout out because he, unfortunately, like many people did, he passed during COVID and he never got to see any of this stuff come out. And, it's a real testament to all the work that he put in, and how generous he was with his talents and abilities. I really wish that he had made it, and saw the fruition of it. I think he would have loved to see that, but, fortunately for us, he was the only one of our family that the above board family we lost during COVID, but, we still have not replaced him. We still don't have a costumer. At some point I'm going to have to get a new costumer, and it just tears my heart out to do that. But, Jerry, you know,
yeah. Jerry would have respected.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
But that's it's just a solid march towards success. And I have nothing but great things to say about the show. And that's not me pandering. I actually enjoy it. I cannot wait to see what you guys do next and all the different things that you kind of have planned. Travis, it's
thanks, man.
Really,
I appreciate it.
Truly, yeah. An honor to speak with you and to even just call you a friend. Like it's
absolutely
a great thing.
Yeah. Adam very, very often is like, as we were coming up with the idea for the podcast, was, man, you need to get in contact with Travis on a professional level and on a personal level too. He's like, yeah, Travis is a good guy.
Oh, thank you so much. That's very sweet.
But it's, you know, it's not for a lack of talent or effort or anything. I think that the show is just, it's a little before its time, but it's about to be that time. And
yeah, we hope so. I think if we have enough people who know it exists, I think it will probably catch fire. We just have to make sure that we get the word out there so people know it's there.
Gen Con will do that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Gen Con's our big coming out party. So
I'm very excited. But yeah, you know, I mean, to kind of just switch directions a little bit. Sure. I did want to ask you, because I think when I spoke with you the last time, we didn't really get into this much, but did you ever have like an inspiration to like be, you know, a voice actor, or was it more of like you kind of fell into that while you were writing and directing?
Did I ever have an inspiration to become a voice actor? I mean, I did voices from when I was a little kid, and when I did stand-up comedy for a short period of time, I did a lot of voices in my stand-up comedy. I have the ability to sound like people and cartoon characters and stuff, voice matching, which is the vast majority of what I do often as characters that already exist or existed before me. You know, I will say this, my then girlfriend, now wife, who worked at a commercial and voiceover agency. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would have got a voiceover agent if it not been for her. She kind of pushed them to what they call pocket me, which was, you know, they weren't officially representing me, but they would send me out for auditions. Hmm. And actually the first big thing I got was Piglet. Yeah. And then of course they said, maybe we should sign this guy.
I mean, but, yeah, when somebody works with Disney consistently, yeah, you kind of have to.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's a very weird, and I give talks now and then to like schools or universities, to actors about, you know, the voiceover industry. And I'm asked a lot of like, how do you get into the voiceover industry? And it's just, it was hard 20 years ago when I did it. And now it's severely difficult. It would be much easier to become a director or a professional writer than it would be to become a voiceover person now, especially in cartoons. Just because, you know, you'll lose a job to some famous actor, you know. It didn't used to be that famous actors were doing. And I remember even back in the day I'll never forget this. It was for Little Mermaid 3. There was a direct-to-video movie from Disney.
Okay.
I was almost the evil witch. I am one of the only, I can't say that anymore. There are a few men that now do women's voices, but I have such a high voice that back in the day I could pull off being a woman. Mm-hmm. And for some bits. And I was this evil witch. And they're like, you have the part. Unless the girl from They Love Me, They Really Love Me from the Oscars.
Dang.
Also from Smokey and the Bandit. I can't believe I'm blanking on her name. That's so funny that I'm blanking on her name. She's like one of the most famous actresses of all time, and I can't remember her name.
Sally Field?
Sally Field, yeah.
Yes.
Unless, of course, we made an offer to Sally Field. Unless, of course, Sally Field says yes, which that won't happen. So, of course, Sally Field said yes.
No.
So I lost a part to Sally Field. Yes. A Oscar-winning actress beat me out for a straight-to-video Disney film. And this was like 15, 20 years ago, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it was at that moment where I was like, oh, this is going to get more difficult if this stuff keeps going on. And of course it, you know, now, you know, I came real close to being Obi-Wan Kenobi because I could do a great Ewan McGregor.
For Clone Wars.
Yeah. I see. Yeah. I know. I kill myself every time I see it. but now they just get Ewan McGregor these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
And just pay Ewan McGregor to do it. That's what they would do. If Clone Wars was cast today, they'd probably just get Ewan McGregor to do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just
I don't think when Clone Wars was initially created that it was a Disney product.
No. Well,
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
And everything.
I want to say back then, you know, especially early 90s, you know, because it's kind of weird for me to say this, but like, I couldn't tell you who the voice actor who does the original Ariel is.
Sure.
You know, like there's a couple that I know, but like I don't know them, but I know
that's the thing, because most of the people who did animated, you know where this changed with DreamWorks? It was Jeffrey Katzenberg. Jeffrey Katzenberg, when he created DreamWorks with Spielberg and Geffen, he decided that he wanted to have big celebrities voice the roles. Up until that point, occasionally you'd have like a Robin Williams. And of course, by the way, that was when Jeffrey Katzenberg was at Disney. Mm-hmm. Was when you had the Robin Williamses and come in and do that kind of thing. Up to that point, like the biggest voiceover actors you would have occasionally step into something would be like you know, Dom DeLuise would come in and he'd do, you know, the Crow.
Oddly enough, Vincent Price was in there a lot too.
He would do, but that was like at the twilight of his life.
Yeah.
So you didn't have A-list celebrities. I remember Burt Reynolds. It was a big, big deal when Burt Reynolds did All Dogs Go to Heaven because that was unusual. You didn't have somebody that big. I mean, Burt Reynolds was still at kind of the height of his career during that period of time. You just didn't have guys do that. But then Jeffrey Katzenberg kind of changed that dynamic. And also, things have gotten more difficult for, you know, Sally Field took that role probably because, you know, there weren't a lot of roles for older women in Hollywood, and it probably paid pretty well. And she's like, yeah, I, you know, just go in a booth. How hard can it be? Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. And there's a lot of folks who prefer, I'm sure if you told her, McGregor, I'll give you X amount of money to come in here and, you know, once a week in for an hour and a half and just sit in front of I'll do that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know,
plus, so it's voice acting is a lot of fun, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it really is.
It's a lot of fun, and you could do it in your pajamas, you know.
I look down at my sweatpants, I'm kidding, not kidding. I'll also say that it's more difficult to get the big name roles, right? Sure. And you know, aspiring voice actor myself, it is very difficult to break into that market to get even into anime these days, it's really hard to get into.
And that in anime used to be, that's how I got started. So I got started in a company
Mercer
called
too, actually.
Anoki Films. And I just did a ton of stuff for Anoki Films, like a ton of stuff. This, you know, straight to video, not even showing in the United States, mostly for Europe, just all this stuff, you know, and that was where I made my bread and butter. That and I worked for the A&E Network for a long period of time as a narrator for various you'll love this. So God, how old was I? 25, 26, 27, somewhere in there, very young. And they wanted somebody, but they had to be authentically English. They didn't want somebody who was putting on a voice.
Right.
So for 2 years, because I went in there and I'm like, yes, I'm from England, you know, and this is the way that I talk, you know. And they went, yeah, he's authentically English. So every time, you know, they'd have these history of the gun and everything. And I would read these, you know, 15th of July, you know, on the battlefront, you know, dear Mary, you know, I read this thing to her. And I did a bunch of that kind of stuff, a bunch of like English narration for A&E documentary stuff. But for 2 years, my voice message had to be in English because they might call me. And so everybody who knew me was like, the first thing would be, why are you speaking in English and you're with an English accent on your voice messages? And I'm like, well, you know, that's, I had to pretend to be authentically English.
That's what pays the bills. But
continuing
my point a little bit, it's really hard to break into those. But thankfully, the production of certain things has gotten easier too.
Sure.
Works that need voice acting. So it's a lot easier to get into those, Foreteller being one, but even a step down from us, you know, people putting together, like my sibling, they are friends with a bunch of people who make just animations on YouTube.
Well, the ability to Mike clean up audio digitally is a big part of that. I mean, I recorded everything from my little rig at home, which is not professional level quality. It's good enough for me to audition.
Yeah.
But we recorded all that stuff from home. And because you have the ability to digitally make things sound so much better than you did before.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, before there would, you know, nobody would dream of taking like a home. In fact, so a good friend of mine back in the day was the voice of the CBS network. And he was one of those in a world guys, right?
Yes.
Got super big bucks. His home setup, because he recorded from home, was a suspension chamber. It was a chamber made of heavy glass that was suspended, so no vibration from the outside world made it into that chamber. And the microphone he had was $5,000. And this was 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And that whole setup cost him something like $25,000, $30,000 to be able to record from home. Now the guy was making three times that a month. So it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But
it paid
I'm just saying like his home setup was this grandiose chamber that he sat in. And my setup that I recorded yours on is, you know, a mic sitting on my desk, you know, and using Adobe Audition to record everything. So,
and that's what Adam told me as well when I first met him was, hey, man, I want that room sound. But I'm like, man, I just spent so much time learning how to cut out the room sound.
Hey, man, don't give away my secrets. No, it's just so funny because I think that clean audio, though it is, you know, the paramount of an engineer's kind of circumstance to go after it, it's actually hilarious because it's harder to make something sound bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember when we did the sound for my movie and we were in like one of those big fancy like Hollywood sound, like this amazing room where you see this giant screen and they're doing your movie and everything. And this was probably 10 years ago.
Right.
And just the technology even back then blew me away. Like you go, yeah, I'm kind of having difficulty hearing that. And he's like, oh, just a second. Boop, 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 boop. How's that? He's like, oh my God, that's completely good. Like at this point, you almost don't need ADR unless you are murdering the words, mm-hmm. you know, unless you're not saying the words properly. We shot, just went online on Monday. The opening to Gamesters, if you watch that video, was shot outside in Las Vegas in front of the Las Vegas sign. While we were shooting it, there was a jet plane idling about 80 feet away. We could not hear ourselves talk when we were doing that opening. Mm-hmm. We had a hard time, Leaf and I had a hard time hearing each other. Yet you listen to it, fine. Sounds perfect.
Yep.
You know, and all we were using, lobs and a boom. And you would never know that. And if you know where the Las Vegas sign is in Las Vegas, it's the open entrance. So there are cars,
yep.
you know, going both ways. There's this giant crowd of people talking and everything. And all of that is gone. All of that is gone with the push of a button. And it's wow. just, I mean, it's amazing. We thought at the time we were saying we're probably going to have to ADR this.
Even nope. some of the onboard stuff as well. Like my, for some interview purposes for Gen Con and other conventions, we recently bought, they're not crazy expensive, but some single unit lapels mm-hmm. Just to make sure that we had something that I could. And I tested it last night. And I had a friend. I'm like, hey, you bang on a desk. You two laugh and have some of our his wife and her friend. You guys just laugh and make a bunch of noise. And he and I had a simple conversation. You could tell people were in the background, but it sounded like they were a mile away.
Yeah, it's because you know, the new technology, you're basically in an audio bubble that covers your head, you yeah. know?
And that was just
what it picks up. Yeah.
On my voice memo.
yeah. with some, it's crazy, huh?
It's kind of crazy, the stuff that you can yeah. do. And I think my first gig I ever did paid for my entire studio here. I made about,
really?
I made about $1,900 narrating an audiobook that I will not tell you the name of. And it got,
was it Shades of Gray?
Definitely. Oh, man, I would have made way more than $1,900, hopefully. But no, it was a fan fiction by somebody
sure.
That was not even a fan fiction. It was a, anyway, long story short, it paid well enough for me to buy.
It was porn.
It was porn.
It was porn. It was porn. yes, it paid well enough for me to buy all of my sound foam, my mic, my the only thing I didn't have to buy was an interface, and I just because I had one at the time, and then Adam hooked me up with the Scarlett Solo, and that does literally everything I need.
Yeah, it's incredible. We're living in amazing times. I can't imagine when my son gets to the age where,
oh gosh,
where you know he's going to be doing this kind of stuff. Like,
yeah,
just take it directly from your brain.
But I was blown away going to a studio for the first time as well, because that's what I did for my what,
dude? Travis, your son is going to get to like mess around in an AR studio.
Oh, what I know. He's very excited.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Like he'll be like, here's my birthday information, you plebeians.
And his first video came out today. He actually did a video today that came out this morning called Evan Wants to Be a DM and at Dice Tower West. It was his idea and we didn't coach him in any way. It was just this little 9-year-old kid going up to adults with no fear and saying, I want to be a DM. Can you help me do this? And basically, he would just ask, you know, what's your character? And then he would put him in a scenario and he said, what do you do? And whatever they would do, he'd just say, oh, you died. And it didn't matter what they did. That's like, you come up with some scenario. Oh, I'm sorry, you just died. You can roll up a new character if you want. And it's really cute because it's just him, you know, being a real little kid doing this. And yeah, so he's very excited to explore all these things. Yeah. Yeah, believe me. In fact, one of the things I promised him that we'd do when the set is that I'm going to make a little movie with him and his two buddies where it looks like they're like fighting monsters as superheroes.
Oh, yes. It'd
be very easy for us to shoot.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah.
So cool. So, so cool, man. And again, you know, like, I just want to say thank you again for, you know, coming on the show and
having fun
with us.
Anytime.
Anytime you need anything, man, you know that Foreteller's around and we'd be more than honored to have you back on the podcast whenever you like.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Actually, my plans for that, if we're still throwing out wishful thinkings, once this episode goes out and people listen to it and your studio gets finished, I planned on making my way out there at some time.
That'd be great.
And just bring my laptop and do the
We can do it in this room and we can we have multiple cameras or we will have multiple cameras in this room.
Multiple monitors maybe.
By the way, when we talked to you about this the walls didn't exist for this room.
Yeah, you were telling me you had nothing to show me. And then nothing. Now you're in a wonderful studio where I can't hear anything but you. Exactly. But I think we should end today with Mike Leaf. We've got the a character pulled up. I'm also from Madara.
Let me get Brett back in here because I can't, of course, see the monitor.
Adam, my initial thought was Padraic. How do you feel about that one?
Oh yeah, yeah. Padraic is an awesome character. He's kind of a biker dude who's super laid back, but has basically had enough of everyone's shit.
Yeah. So you just dealt like the deciding blow to somebody after
the grindstone. Yeah. You have any accent that you want to kind of have?
So he's from Seattle.
The difference between me and
is he actually Memphis. Adam?
Yes, Padraic is from Seattle.
That's amazing.
He got sucked into the world of Madara.
That famous Seattle accent.
That famous Seattle accent that
closest thing to be would be like a Canadian thing.
All right, we've got Travis Oates here reading for Padraic from Madara Act 2. Let's see what you got.
And that's what you get for interrupting my work,
he called, brandishing the skillet dramatically.
Next one to bother me gets what they did. And no supper.
Padraic's expression softened. He could complain all he liked, but he wanted it to be needed.
Fine, but only because the captain and the mysterious practitioner of an extinct school of magic asked so nicely.
He spun, leveling the skillet at Zeke.
Not a word, Prince. You're on thin ice.
Oh, Jesus. It was like listening to a masterclass.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. God.
And especially for, like, the like you expressed before, the anime cartoony world of Madara.
Sure.
Giving those extra emphasis to the specific words for cartoon characters is so important.
Yeah, I love Madara. I love Madara.
Yep. You nailed Padraic. He's That's how it's done. Cool. Ladies and gentlemen of the crowd, if you ever wanted to know how Travis Oates does it, it's the right way.
Well, there you go.
Yes.
All right. So I think we're going to probably wrap this up.
We are.
I got my guys over there who are looking for me for a production meeting.
All right.
Well, like I said, man, we really appreciate you being on the show. And if you ever need anything from us, just feel free to reach out because Foreteller is your biggest fan.
Absolutely, man. And I will definitely be doing some stuff above board, and Foreteller will definitely partner for some fun stuff in the future. For sure.
All right. Yeah. Thank you everybody for watching the Forecast episode 3 with Travis Oates. I've had a wonderful time. Thank you.
You too.